Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello. Welcome to the New Books in Jewish Studies podcast. I am your host, Ari Barbalat. Today, it is my honor to be in dialogue with Tsafrir Barzilai. He is a senior lecturer in the Department of History at Bar-Ilan University. We will be discussing his newly published book, Poisoned Wells, Accusations, Persecutions, and Minorities in Medieval Europe, 1321 to 1422, published in Philadelphia by University of Pennsylvania Press, 2022. Tsafrir, it's an honor to be in dialogue with you today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Ari.
To begin, please tell us about yourself. What formative events in your life catalyzed the scholar you had become as adults? Can you tell us about the path you took to becoming a historian?
It's a good question. Actually, when I grew up, I thought I'm going to be a physicist. It didn't turn out that way. After I finished high school, I went to the army, and then I spent a year working in a factory, and I read a lot during that year. And I found that the thing that I was reading the most was history. That's what I liked. That's where I gravitated. And I signed in for a history degree at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. And I loved it. The first year I had an excellent professor for medieval history, Diego Olstein. And I fell in love with the Middle Ages, and especially with the issue of minorities and the ruling majority in the Middle Ages. And I pretty much stayed there in all kinds of variations over the years.
What inspired you to write this book? What message do you hope to convey to readers?
These are two very different questions. What actually inspired me to write this book is that I saw a historiographical need as a student, even when I was doing my BA, my bachelor's degree. I saw many references to the persecution of Jews after the Black Death as one of the major events of medieval Jewish history and in actually Jewish history in general. And at the same time, I found that many of these references are not deep enough in the way that they explain this major event, not specific enough in the primary sources they cite, not conclusive enough in documenting and following most of the known cases. And I just saw a need there. I saw a major historical event that all historians agree is highly important, and that was not explained well enough. So I saw the need. And when I had to decide on a topic for a PhD, I saw an opportunity. And from my PhD, I did a lot of research. Not all of it went into the book, but I saw that this is an opportunity for me to fill this historiographical gap. As for the message, there are several messages that you can take from this book. Historians, often what I heard from colleagues who read this book, what they see here is a warning against reading all anti-Jewish incidents or anti-Jewish ideas or opinions as a uniform phenomenon. Different ideas, anti-Jewish ideas that developed in the Middle Ages, ritual murder, host desecrations, these are all very famous, but they do not necessarily all work the same from historical perspective. They don't necessarily have the same dynamic. They do not necessarily happen in the same political or social conditions. So what I was trying to do is to take one example, the issue of well poisoning accusations, and analyze it as its own subject, unrelated to other incidents of anti-Jewish accusations, and try to see what can I discover about the development of this idea and this political movement, you can call it, in particular. And what I discovered is that this idea didn't actually develop around Jews, but it developed around lepers, and it's very much shaped the way it was created, conceived, circulated, and so forth.
What are the primary themes in your book? What story and stories does your book tell?
So the story, the book tells a single story, the story of the invention or the spreading of well poisoning accusations, the way they gained popularity through the 14th century. The two major episodes of well poisoning accusations happened in 1321, was the first wave, mostly in France and Aragon. And another wave happened after the Black Death from 1348 to 1350. And after these two major waves of well poisoning accusations, the accusations subside in the second half of the 14th century and the early 15th century. So the book is basically, the main narrative is a rise and decline, the rise of well poisoning accusations and their decline. And the whole story happens over about a century, from the 1320s to the 1420s.
What does your book's title mean? Why did you choose poisoned wells as the specific words of your title?
Well, I think there is a double meaning here. Poisoned wells obviously refers to well poisoning accusations, the idea that minorities would poison wells as a kind of attack against the ruling elite or the public in general. If you think about well poisoning, it's the medieval version of a weapon of mass destruction. Everybody needs water, everybody drinks water. And in medieval cities, everyone share water sources. So an attack against the wells is an attack against the public. At the same time, we have a more metaphorical or allegorical understanding of poisoning, of well poisoning as introducing a corrosive or a dangerous idea. And this is exactly what happened here. No one actually poisoned the wells. This is an idea that was developed in particular political circumstances with particular political agents within courts during interrogations of minorities. And this corrosive idea was spread in society and caused a lot of damage to minorities, mostly Jews, but not only Jews, in the 14th century. So you have poisoned wells in the very literal sense of the idea of well poisoning, and in the more general sense of introducing a dangerous idea into society.
How did poisoning accusations emerge? Who were the perpetrators? What motivated them? What were the causes, consequences, and ramifications?
Okay, so these are three different and very important questions. So the first thing that I have to say is that poisoning accusations in general became very common in the second half of the 14th century, of the 13th century, I'm sorry, and especially in the early 14th century. So when you look in France, especially in the south in the early 14th century, everyone are accusing each other of poisoning. There are many examples of political conspiracies of in which someone accuses someone else of poisoning and someone two sides accusing each other. The new thing that happens in 1321 is that suddenly you have an accusation against a minority group trying to poison the entire society. And this is a major shift from earlier accusations, because it allows well poisoning accusation to become an accusation that shifts the social reality or of a particular group, or actually causing the persecution of a particular minority group. And the way these accusations came about is from the attempts of political agents, especially municipal councils in the south of France, southwest of France, to take control over leper houses. So lepers had their own houses, leprosaria, and they lived when someone was diagnosed with leprosy. They were forced to move into these communities, but these communities were not completely closed as sometimes people imagine leper houses in the Middle Ages. And when someone was forced to join this community, they live in the leper house, but they would enter the city. They would sometimes work outside of the leper house. It was not completely enclosed. Now, the leper houses were very, very common. You can find at least one in every medieval town, sometimes even a village. And in large cities like Toulouse, you can find several, five, six, seven leper houses. And these leper houses were usually located outside of the city walls. And they were under the protection of the local bishop, at least officially. And they had a great degree of autonomy until the 14th century. And one of the things that happens in the 14th century is that local municipal councils are trying to take control over these leper houses that sometimes have a significant property, land, and all kinds of valuables. And the city councils are trying to justify to the king the idea that they should control the leper houses around the city and not the local bishops. And they're trying to do that, and they are being rejected by the King of France, Philip V. And in 1321, they come up with the idea that they would charge the lepers of poisoning wells. And at first, they only suggest that the lepers can poison the public. And this idea actually kind of makes sense because leprosy is considered a very, very infectious disease. This is the reason why the lepers are being forced into these segregated communities. And even before 1321, there is this idea that lepers should not use or drink from public fountains because they can poison the public, not on purpose, of course, but their disease is infectious. And we see a series of attempts to segregate them from the general public. And city councils in southwestern France are trying to take over this idea and use it as a political tool. They basically say the lepers are dangerous for the public. We all know that. Therefore, we, the municipal councils, the strong political player in the area, should take control and manage the leper houses. And of course, benefit from their property. The king doesn't really buy this argument, but they actually take the idea that the lepers are dangerous to the public and they push it further and they say it's not only that the lepers might poison or infect the public by accident, they also might do it on purpose. And this is the great innovation. And what they actually do in April 1321 is they start in certain cities, arrest local lepers, hold them, and interrogate them. And they ask the lepers, how or when did you poison water sources or cast a spell on poison? I'm sorry, on water sources. And in the beginning, it's not very clear that they actually succeeded, that anyone was poisoned. But from one investigation to the other, from one interrogation to the other, more and more details are added to the story. And we can see that each interrogation actually starts from the place that the previous one ended. So the more they investigate lepers and accuse them of poisoning wells, the more the story of well poisoning develops. So it's not that someone had a complete story of a well poisoning conspiracy in their mind and then they spread it. But the way things actually happened is that municipal councils and some local nobles wanted to justify political action against local lepers, and they developed the idea of well poisoning to justify this political action. And the more the political action moved forward, the more the story developed to justify it.
Can you comment on the roles played by rumors in the history of the Black Death?
Maybe we should start before the Black Death, because rumors play a major part through the development of well poisoning accusations. So also in France in 1321, there are rumors that someone poisoned the wells, and these rumors spread, and these rumors actually played an important part in the transferring of the accusations from lepers to Jews, which also happens already in 1321. And the problem with rumors is that as a historian, I know that they are there. I sometimes hear about them. Sometimes my sources will tell me there are rumors floating around, but it's very hard to get the details of these rumors. They are very often undocumented. And I suspect that the way these accusations are actually turn into persecution of minorities has to do with institutions, with courts, with officials, with city councils, who take these rumors, which are flying around, and make them into actual accusations that can be put forward in court against lepers, against Jews, and sometimes even against other minorities. So rumors play an important part, but the way ideas or rumors turn into violence has to do with institutions and the political action of institutions. And regarding the Black Death, I can say the same thing, but what is important about the Black Death is that, unlike in France in 1321, people are actually dying. The Black Death is probably the most devastating ecological or environmental catastrophe in the history of Europe, as far as we know, as far as our sources allow us to tell. And perhaps a quarter or a third of European population died within the course of 4 years. So unlike during 1321, when the Black Death appears, people are actually dying. So there are not only rumors of well poisoning, there are also rumors or very substantiated rumors, actually news about the plague and about very significant mortality. So the mortality actually gives further credit, further not justification, but substantiation to the well poisoning accusations. And if you ask me, to speculate what would happen without the Black Death, I think that well poisoning accusation would probably have disappeared after 1321. But it so happened that 27 years later, the Black Death appears, and the idea of well poisoning suddenly makes a lot of sense to people when they see this massive mortality.
Can you explain the primary physical symptoms of the Black Death? What would somebody feel and suffer who contracted the Black Death?
Okay, I should say that I'm not a historian of medicine, but the Black Death is actually called bubonic plague. It is caused by a germ called Yersinia pestis, after the French doctor who diagnosed it in the late 19th century, and it causes it attacked the lymph nodes in the body, and it then, after it multiplies in the bloodstream, it goes to the general bloodstream, and then it can cause shock, and many people died of it. It would likely manifested in several days of very, very high fever, and then many of the people would die. But if you survive these several days, 10 days of fever, you might survive. It was very a very, very deadly disease in the 14th century. But we should also note that this disease keep coming back every several years after its first outbreak in the mid 14th century. And the Black Death actually became a reality of European life until the late 17th century. So you had several centuries of recurring outbreaks of the Black Death, and the recurrent outbreaks were not as severe as the original outbreak.
On page 2, you write as follows. Often Jews were the victims, but lepers, Muslims, paupers, and foreigners also suffered persecution. Can you comment on the mistreatment that these different groups faced during the Black Death? What were the similarities and differences between the mistreatment Jews experienced and the mistreatment that other groups experienced?
So I will try and comment on each group separately, because the different circumstances of the accusations are unique for each group. So as I said, the accusations start with lepers, and the major victims of the accusations in 1321 are lepers. But then they're being transferred to French Jews, and they'll probably play a major role in the fact that French Jews are expelled from the kingdom, if not officially, then in practice, in late 1321. Now, many of the lepers are being executed in 1321. The ones who are not are being forced to stay in their leprosaria and not live for a few years. But later, the King of France pardons them. But in many ways, the leper communities in France do not recover from the persecution of 1321. They never return to the numbers or political influence or power that they had in the early 14th century. When it comes to Muslims, Muslims are being persecuted in a few minor cases in Aragon. So Aragon has a major Muslim community in the early 14th century, and this is the place where Muslims are a major minority. So in France, there are rumors about Muslims being involved in well poison accusations, but we don't have cases of Muslims being arrested and persecuted because there are, at least on paper, there are no Muslims in France at the time. But in Aragon, there are major Muslim communities, and of course, there are tensions between Muslims and Christians, Muslims and Jews, and this is the background for the accusations of some Muslims of being involved in well poisoning in 1321. I should say that they never become major victims. It doesn't develop the same way the persecution of lepers developed or the persecution of Jews. Now, in 1348, lepers are not a major community anymore in France because of the persecution of 1321. And the Jews were expelled after 1321, so there are no major Jewish communities in France at the time. So the persecution during the Black Death actually start with marginalized Christians, paupers, foreigners, people who come from out of town. No one knows them, no one knows their name. And in medieval cities, you would have many of these people all of the time. But when the Black Death appear and social tensions are heightened, then these people can sometimes be accused of being a danger to the public, of spreading the plague. And in 1348, the accusation really start with these marginalized Christians. And only later, when they spread north to the areas of modern-day Switzerland, more or less, are they transferred to Jews. However, in the areas of Switzerland, the accusations become mainly associated with Jews. And when they reach the German Empire, when you have many major Jewish communities, it's already very much established that the Jews are the major conspirators. And Jews are being persecuted in the German Empire in very high numbers. It's very hard to tell exactly what happened in every location, but we are talking about 300 cases of anti-Jewish persecution or something like that. Very high numbers, and each case involves a community, so potentially a few hundred people. And in the German Empire, what would usually happen is that the Jews are being accused and persecuted or executed or expelled before the plague actually reaches a certain location in most cases. They hear rumors about the plague. It takes time for the Black Death to spread and reach a certain area, especially since it spreads from the south of Europe to the north. So until it reaches Germany, it takes a lot of time, and there are a lot of rumors about well poisoning. And in many cases, the Jews would be tried and executed or expelled before the Black Death actually occurs. They're trying to prevent the plague from happening. And one of the things that happens is that many Jews, when the Jewish communities are being put on trial, some of them at least are trying to save themselves by converting. And in some cases, when the plague actually hit a particular city, after they expelled their Jews or even executed their Jews, then they would turn against the converts because they were not able to prevent the disease. And the result of that is devastating for the Jewish communities of Germany. In many of them, we in ma for many of the major communities, they just disappear for 20, 30 years. And we only see many of the major communities being reestablished, sometimes in a different location, in the 1370s, 1380s. So for German Jews in particular, the well poisoning accusations and the persecution that followed really uprooted their communities, destroyed families. And when their communities were being reestablished, first of all, they were very often much smaller. And second, they were established in a different location. Sometimes they would have to rebuild the synagogue or hire different houses because their original houses were destroyed during the Black Death, or they couldn't buy them back. And even when we see the communities of the later 14th century or early 15th century in Germany return to their old location, sometimes it's a completely new community in many ways. So for the Jews in particular, the persecution of the Black Death was absolutely devastating and a turning point in Jewish history in Germany for sure.
What was the Manusk affair? Can you
Well,
explain what occurred?
there are several affairs, but I think you're referring to the one that I described as the first well poisoning accusation. What happens is that Manosque is a town in Provence, and there was a flourishing Jewish community in Manosque and a Jewish cemetery. And one day, a Jew came to Manosque from out of town, and he brought the body of a young boy or an infant who died from natural causes to be buried in the cemetery of Manosque, and he went with the body into the city. This happened shortly before 1321, and one of the locals saw him and told him that he has to take the body and leave the town. The cemetery was presumably outside of the city walls, and this Jew went towards the wall of the city, and on his way out, he stopped by the local well to drink water, and from that developed an accusations against local Jews that this Jew was trying to poison the well by throwing a body into it. As far as I can tell, this accusation never developed into persecution of Jews, or even let alone widespread persecution like happened in 1321 with lepers and later with Jews. But I think this early case shows us that people were very, very worried about the public water sources, and they had a very significant mistrust towards minorities and Jews in particular. And this is the background. This is what later allows well poisoning accusations to flourish and to transfer from one minority, from lepers, to the Jews.
What was the Great Famine? What is its relationship to the Black Death? Can you explain?
So the Great Famine was a major crisis that hit society, especially in Northern Europe, but in Europe more generally. In the early 14th century, one of the major first episodes happened from 1315 to 1317. And the Great Hunger was basically a failure in grain production. During the High Middle Ages, the climate was usually quite warm and very stable in a way that made Northern Europe very favorable to producing grain. This allowed the population to grow and cities to develop and all kinds of important things that happens in the middle for in the High Middle Ages. The problem is that in the early 14th century, the climate cooled quite drastically, with no relation to human action, just for natural causes. And one of the things that it caused is very intensive summer rains. And rains during the summer hinder the harvesting of grains, and you have wheat and barley, basically, especially wheat, rotting in the fields. And this happens for 3 years in a row. And grain production is basically the most important aspect of European economy. This is an agricultural economy, and most of the economy is based on producing food. And when you have a crisis in grain production, it influences the entire market, and it causes great economic crisis, and it causes major hunger that happened between 1315 to 1317. And the problem was that the climate was not done cooling yet, and you would have summer rains very often during the 14th century, and even later in the 15th and 16th centuries, and you would have years of hunger one after the other. And several historians suggested, and it makes a lot of sense, that the Great Hunger caused social distress and tensions that were also expressed in well-positioned accusations. So the Great Famine happened in 1315 to 1317, and the first major cases of well-positioned accusations happened in 1321. However, I'm not sure it's a direct cause, because you have several years in the middle and several other important things that take place during these years. I think it can be a factor in the sense that economic crisis is always a good background for persecution of minorities or accusations against minorities. But I think the major cause for the outbreak of well-positioned accusations in 1321 is the weakness of the King of France and the attempt of local political actors like the city councils and some local nobles to take over the leper houses. The famine and the social crisis it creates basically gives them the opportunity. But they have the motivation to take over leper houses long before the Great Famine.
What kinds of religious meaning did Christians and Jews apply to the Black Death?
So when it comes to the Black Death, when it comes to Jews, it's more difficult to say. We don't have many Jewish texts that discuss the Black Death from a theological perspective. We have a few. But it's not a very easy questions to answer. But when it comes to Christians, we have a lot of texts, and many of them discuss the Black Death as divine punishment. Now, in a sense, this explanation is a competing explanation to the idea of well poisoning. If the Black Death is a divine punishment for the sins of Christians, then it kind of negates the idea that someone would poison the wells. The wells were not poisoned. The disease was a cause of was the cause of divine anger. But when you have many Christians who adopt this idea of the plague as a divine punishment, you have others who look for natural causes, and then sometimes the idea of well poisoning comes into play. But even in some cases, you have people who talk about divine punishment, and at the same time suggest that there was some kind of a human cause. So while we might expect that these two ideas would conflict, we have several examples of 14th century Christians who hold both at the same time, who suggest that the plague was a divine punishment, but still the Jews helped, or the enemies of God, or the enemies of France, or the enemies of the public would spread the disease, or somehow play agents who helped it to circulate, or something like that. So these ideas sometimes work together, and I think we can understand that because this is a time of major crisis. This is a disease that no one has seen like ever. Mortality is unprecedented. And sometimes when people see something like that, they come up with any explanation that they can think of. And sometimes they would come up with all of the explanations at the same times. And we see texts like that. So the idea that the plague is a divine punishment does not necessarily negate the idea that minorities poison the wells, even though some Christians claim that. Most prominently, the Pope, Clement the Sixth, published several letters calling on Christians to stop persecuting Jews because the plague is a divine punishment. But as we can understand from the fact that Jews were persecuted, many do not accept his explanation, or at least do not think that the fact that the plague was a divine punishment is a reason enough to think that no one poisoned the well.
How were women impacted differently than men by the Black Death, both medically and also socially?
It's very, very hard to tell. We have very, very few sources, especially when it comes to the first outbreak. When it comes to later outbreaks, as I said, the Black Death keeps coming back every 10 to 15 years in European cities. So for later outbreaks, we have sources claiming that a certain outbreak only targeted women, or only targeted young people, or only targeted old people, and all kinds of these suggestions. We have no medical reason to think that this was the case, but we have several narrative sources that claim that. When it comes to the first outbreak of the Black Death, the mortality is so wide that women were influenced in a very, very significant way, at least as much as men. And as far as we can tell, for the first outbreak, everyone died. I don't know that there is a specific influence when it comes to women in particular.
Can you tell us about the King's Prison in Vitry? What were conditions like there? Why is it significant?
The reason that I'm writing about the King's Prison in Vitry is to show we have, you asked about the Jews and the way that they were influenced by the persecution. The problem, one of the problems that I had when I was trying to figure out how the persecution moved from lepers to Jews is to find who was responsible, when exactly did it happen. And I was trying to find all of the cases where we have evidence of Jews being persecuted and see where did it happen, who might have been involved, who are the political agents that acted in this area. And one of the stories that we have is about Jews who were held in the king's prison in Vitry. We know that there was a castle in Vitry that was used as a prison by the kings of France at the time, and Jews that were held there. And the story itself is kind of a legendary story. It's a version of a story that goes back even to Josephus. It's an old story. But the details about the Vitry castle leads me to think that what happens there is an organized arrest of local Jews and a trial having to do with well poisoning. So we have a description of local Jews being arrested in the castle that we know served as a royal prison. So this leads me to think that what happens there is already an organized persecution, at least to some degree, by the king officials or by local officials with some approval of the king, where Jews were arrested and accused of oil poisoning. And this is one of the evidence that I'm trying to use to argue that what happens in 1321 is that there is a political action from people related to the king that tries to move that or transfer the accusations from lepers, who were the major victims in the first months of the persecution, to Jews. And in order to do that, they have to arrest Jews, interrogate them, come up with documents that incriminate them and spread these documents. And this is what we see in 1321. And the Vitry prison is one of the several evidence that I'm trying to put forward to show that this is what happened.
What are the specific statistics as to the death toll of the Bath plague?
I don't know. Most historians go with some kind of number between 25 and 35%. But the truth is that our sources are all over the place. We have sources that claim 60, 70, 80, 90 degrees, 90% mortality in certain cities. Now, that is very unlikely. It's unlikely that you would have 80% mortality and the city would still function. But narrative sources tend to exaggerate. People see a major disaster. They see a lot of bodies in the street. They see mass graves. They see mass funerals. And they say, well, everyone must have died. But not everyone died. But there is a very, very high mortality. It's very hard to come up with statistics because at that period, we don't have communal records that allow us to create this kind of statistics. In the 15th century, we are starting to see communal records. You have records in the church, for example, of the local priest who would document everyone who was baptized or died in a community. And then you can come up with statistics for a particular year and so on. And this is the beginning of serious statistics about mortality. For the mid 14th century, we don't have that in most places. We have that a little bit in England, but that's about it. So for most places, I can give you a number of 30% or something like that, or 35%, but I can't say much more.
Can you describe the spread of the Black Death? Where did it appear at what times and when? Can you describe the stages at which the Black Death reached different places in Europe in general and different locations in France in particular?
Yes. So the Black Death actually starts, it's a disease that starts with rodents. Rodents are the vector and fleas or lice transfer the disease from rodents to human. So the first outbreak of the plague is actually in Central Asia. And it slowly moves both south and east and west. And as it moves west, it reaches the areas of the Black Sea. And from there, Italian merchants bring it to the Italian merchant cities of southern Italy and of northern Italy. That happens in late 1347. From there, it quickly spread to the other mercantile cities of the Mediterranean. So you would find it in Provence, and then you'll find it further in southern France, and then you'll find it in Barcelona, in Aragon. And from there, the disease starts spreading north. Now, what would happen is that merchants would bring with them grain, and with the grain they would take rats and fleas, and will actually spread the Black Death. So the Black Death spread much more quickly where ships carrying merchants and grain reached. So you see it spread very, very quickly along the shores of Mediterranean Europe, and then transfers very, very slowly, or much more slowly, north into the continent. And it takes only 4 or 5 months for the disease to spread across the Mediterranean Sea. But until it reaches the north, it takes another a year or even a year and a half. So it only reaches the northern part of France in mid 1349, and the same in Germany. So it takes a long time to reach from the shores to the central of the continent, and it usually, in most cases, it moves from the south, from southern Europe, to the north. But as I said, the transfer of the plague is not the same as the transfer of the accusations. The accusations, well, poisoning accusations, usually transfer much more quickly than the plague itself, because rumors about the plague already reach places long before the actual bacteria actually reaches the place, and you get an outbreak. They would have rumors, and they would often try to act on these rumors and persecute minorities or expel them before the plague reached their town. So there is not a direct correlation between the spread of the plague and the spread of the accusations.
What is your book's contribution to the history of science and the history of medicine?
I think my book allows historians of medicine to connect their findings better to social phenomena. My expertise is I'm a social historian. I look at politics. I look at interactions between people. I look at how ideas and spread, how ideas lead to social action. But this is a separation, taking history and separating it into medical history, social history, political history, and so forth. This is something that historians do in order to write books, so that I can finish my book and write 200 pages and not 700 pages. But the way things happened in real life, you have medical history, you have the spread of the disease, and you have social interactions influenced by the disease happening at the same time. So if you really want to understand the dynamic of the Black Death, you should read my book, but you should also read books that having to do with spread of the disease, with its influence on particular communities, and so on and so forth. And in the last decade, there were amazing discoveries about the way the Black Death has spread through the study of medical history and through DNA analysis, and very, very interesting things that are happening in this field. Now, my book doesn't go into that. So if you're looking of a good medical history of the Black Death, my book is not that. But my book brings, I think, important elements to the social influence of the disease and explaining them. So I would encourage you to read other things that deal with medical history and try to put it together. But my book does not focus on medical history, even though I comment on that a little bit, because you can't completely disconnect the two things. But I focus mainly on social history.
Can you compare and contrast the impact of the Black Death upon France with its impact on other parts of Europe?
It's very difficult to do. First of all, because I'm not a historian of medicine, and second, because our sources usually prevent us from doing that. As I said, narrative sources tend to exaggerate. They say a lot of people died. When you have someone writing a lot of people died in Cologne, and someone writing a lot of people died in Paris, it's very difficult to compare that and to understand how things happened differently. I will say that the first outbreak of the Black Death was very quick. It influenced almost every part of Europe that we have documentation from in about 4 years. And the mortality rate was very high everywhere. So in that sense, it's kind of a uniform disaster. Unlike other disasters, like the Great Famine, for example, that were very influenced from local circumstances, from the local markets, from the responses of local authority, the Black Death is kind of a uniform disaster. And from historical perspective, this is very interesting, because very rarely you have some kind of a uniform crisis that you can see different communities react to, and then you can compare the way different communities react to the same, to basically the same thing. Because most often what you have is a local crisis or a crisis that is unique to different places. And the Black Death in that sense was fairly uniform as far as we can tell.
On page 106, you write the follows. You write as follows. Moreover, while the number of lepers declined, the number of poor, beggars, and vagabonds in European in cities burgeoned. Even before the plague, many people were impoverished and forced off their lands due to demographic growth and exhaustion of natural resources. During the 13th century, peasants began to work marginal lands like swamps, hillsides, and woodlands to produce more arable land. But since the population continued to grow, the average size of plots decreased. The agricultural techniques that had been introduced in previous centuries had exhausted the land, and productivity did not increase. Consequently, in the early 14th century, the population in many parts of Europe was often on the verge of starvation. Adding to the crisis, the climate shifted drastically. Temperatures dropped, leading to harsher winters and an excess of summer rains, which diminished agricultural production further. Since peasants had little surplus to live off during such times, a few bad years were enough to cause great hunger. The famine of 1315 to 1317 was the most devastating of these episodes, but hunger became generally common in the following decades. While the rich could afford expensive grain, the poor starved. With the decline of agricultural production, the land in the countryside no longer supported its inhabitants. Bad weather, wars, and moraines that decimated livestock made the situation desperate, and many families had to sell or simply leave their lands in search of employment in the growing cities. Yet few found such employment. Despite waves of urbanization, towns could not maintain the multitude of impoverished peasants arriving from the countryside, who sometimes found employment as temporary workers but often ended up as beggars or thieves. Urban charity mechanisms, which developed considerably during the previous century, were no longer sufficient to help the masses. Beggars and drifters filled the streets of medieval towns to the dismay of urban authorities. Can you say more about what you're describing here?
So, if you look at the 14th century more generally, yes, you have the Black Death and you have the Great Famine, but the 14th century in general is a century of crisis. When you look at the High Middle Ages, if you look at the a population graph of European population, you would see a rise starting from about the 10th century or the early 11th century, and continuing throughout the Middle Ages, especially Northern Europe. You would see population grow significantly during the Middle Ages, urbanization, trade, and so on and so forth. But the whole thing is based on the agriculture, on agricultural production, for the population to grow, for cities to develop, for trade to flourish. You need agricultural production to be stable. And what happens in the 14th century is that because of the population growth, the technological innovations that supported the growth of the 14th century exhaust themselves. Quite simply, they ran out of good lands to work. And what most of the calories of Europeans in the 14th century come from grains, from wheat, from barley, from oats, and so forth. When they have a crisis of grain production, you have a major economic crisis. And this is what I was trying to describe here, the major economic crisis that is being caused by the exhaustion of agricultural production of the High Middle Ages. And in addition, by the changing weather, I was trying to show or trying to explain that the crisis of the 14th century started before the Black Death. And when you look at well poisoning accusations, they developed during this time of crisis. Now, this is not a uniform explanation for the appearance and for the flourishing of well poisoning accusations. There are other factors, other political factors that plays a major part. However, when you look at the background for these accusations, this is a period of social crisis, and we have to take that into consideration.
As we bring today's dialogue to a close, can you tell us about where your time and attention have gone since completing this book?
Yes, I will do so very, very quickly. So since working on this book, I went a little bit into Jewish history and the histories of minorities. I looked at violence and the way minorities fought about violence. And I looked more about environmental history, about water, and about the way in which medieval people used water, rivers, water systems, and the way it this use of water interacted with their spiritual life.
Amazing. That sounds absolutely marvelous and very, very important.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. As we end today's dialogue, I'm your host on the New Books in Jewish Studies podcast, Ari Barbalat. Today, it has been my blessing and my honor to be in dialogue with Tzafrir Barzilai. We've been discussing his newly published book, Poisoned Wells, Accusations, Persecutions, and Minorities in Medieval Europe, 1321 to 1422, published in Philadelphia by University of Pennsylvania Press, 2022. Tzafrir Barzilai is senior lecturer at Bar-Ilan University in the Department of History. Thank you so much.